her part, and this is where the word Tirthapadiya indicates devotees who are Vishnu or Vaishnavas. As far as Brahmins are concerned, in the previous verse, the mode of reception has already been described. And in this verse, special stress is being given to the Vaishnavas. Generally, the sannyasis, or those in the renounced order of life, take trouble to enlighten the householders. There are Ekadandi sannyasis and Chitandi sannyasis. Ekadandi sannyasis are generally followers of Shankaracharya, are known as Mayava sannyasis, whereas the Chitandi sannyasis are followers of Vaishnavacharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharyas, and so on. And they take trouble to enlighten the householders. Ekadandi sannyasis can be situated on the platform of pure Brahman because they are aware that the spirit soul is different from the body. But they are mainly impersonals. The Vaishnavas know that the absolute truth is the supreme person, and the Brahman consciousness is based on the supreme personality of God as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanohi Pratishtham. The conclusion is that Tirthapadiya refers to Vaishnavas. In the Bhagavatam, there is another reference, Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani. Wherever he goes, a Vaishnava immediately makes that place a Tirtha, a place of pilgrimage. The Vaishnava sannyasis travel all over the world to make every place a place of pilgrimage by the touch of their feet. It is mentioned here that any house which does not receive a Vaishnava in the manner already explained in the previous verse is to be considered the residential quarters of venomous serpents. It is said that around the sandalwood tree, which is a very valuable tree, there is a venomous serpent. Sandalwood is very called venomous serpents because of the poisonous teeth. Teeth are always very warm and they take shelter. The sandalwood trees can become cooler. Similarly, there are many rich men who keep watchdogs or doormen and put up signs that say, "Do not enter, trespassers not allowed, beware of the dog," etc. Sometimes in Western countries, a trespasser is shot and there's no crime in such shooting. This is the position of Devaniya householders, and such houses are considered to be the residential quarters of venomous snakes. The members of such families are no better than snakes because snakes are very much envious, and when that envy is directed to a second person, the position becomes more dangerous. It is said by Chanakya Pandit that there are two envious living entities, a snake and an envious man. The envious man is more dangerous than a snake because a snake can be subdued by charming mantras or by some herbs, but an envious person cannot be pacified by any means. Translation: a person who is not very rich and is attached to family life becomes highly glorified when saintly persons are present in his home. The master and servants are engaged in offering and exalted visitors water, setting place, spiritually for reception, and glorified in the house itself is also glorified. On the contrary, even though full of all opulence and material prosperity in the householder's house, where the devotees of the Lord are never allowed to come in, and where there's no water for washing their feet, is to be considered a tree in which all venomous serpents live. So this is a Prithu Maharaj speaking in relation to the appearance of the Kumaras who have come to him, and he's a householder, according to the pastime, and therefore he welcomes the Kumaras, who are Brahmacharis. And in these verses, he explains the duty of the householder, that he has to welcome the guests. Of course, this applies to all guests. It's a general principle that one welcomes the guests in the house. But that, of course, is different degrees of what is a guest even. For instance, a beggar is not considered a guest. So in ancient times, when people were traveling on foot, then they may come to your house because they're traveling. They have no place. They didn't have hotels in those days. So they got to stay somewhere. So they would come and ask for water or whatever. So if they are in need and they are not simply beggars, but they're because they're traveling or whatever, they need some shelter or whatever, yeah, it is the householder's duty to welcome those persons. And even then there's various degrees of how you welcome a certain person. And the ultimate, of course, the highest, is the saintly person, that one should welcome the saintly person in the best possible manner. So here we have the procedures. If one is not rich but poor, then one cannot offer so much. So ultimately, at least, you have to offer a sitting place or some water or words, at least words, polite words and treatment. And if you can offer more than that, fine. If you can offer a place to sleep and a meal and all sorts of other comforts, fine. But this was a general custom, a duty of a householder to welcome guests. And of course, in the case of a king, then he has to do much more than that. And in the case of the person coming, if they are saintly, as in the case of Kumaras, then one has to do the utmost to welcome them. So the, of course, the regular rule of Atithi Seva is more or less a punya. It's a service to other people, so this is a punya. But when it comes to saintly persons, then it's not a punya anymore, it is bhakti, or at least a gyatha sukriti. So one welcomes the saintly person in the house and offers some things, and that is the type of service one is doing to the saintly person. So this is very beneficial for the householder. So we see the example quoted in the beginning of the Bhagavatam of Sukadeva, and he would wander from place to place, and he wouldn't stay in any one place because he was not attached, and he didn't want to become attached. But then if he came to a place, then he would take minimum requirements, and he would speak about the Supreme Lord. So that is the benefit that the householder gets from all of this. So here they are called Vinamedis. They're not actually very spiritual. But if these persons have that duty to welcome the guests in order to help them become relieved of their greedy mentality. So because of these duties, then they can't be too attached to their wealth and their money, etc. They have to be very willing to receive the guests, care for them, etc. So this way they will give up that greedy mentality. So this is like a precaution, more or less, to keep the householders from becoming too greedy. And of course, Prabhupada mentioned the purport that many people nowadays, they don't want anybody coming to their house. They put up signs and with fences and locks and dogs, etc. to keep people out. This, of course, is also some practical measure in the modern age because the world is so dangerous. And you do get unwanted persons coming in. So, and then the opposite is that someone who doesn't welcome anybody, the household who doesn't do that, so those persons are condemned. And the place is considered like a tree with serpents around it. That's the place that nobody wants to go to. By the positive and negative statements here, it is showing that, therefore, the Kumaras deserve a very, very great welcome. And in the process of doing so, he also instructs the regular householders on their duties in household life. So as I mentioned, the rule is there in order that the householders don't become greedy. And the second verse shows the greedy mentality, the persons who don't welcome the guests. They don't welcome them because they don't want to spend their money or their wealth or whatever. And they're very, very stingy. And as a result of that, do not get the advantage of spiritual life, whatever. And of course, they also don't get the advantage of giving, which is a good punya for them. So in this way, they end up in a very hellish condition in the next lifetime. So the rules of the Varnashram system were there to help people in whatever station they were advance. So this is one rule for the householders. It cannot obviously apply to Brahmacharya. charges because they don't have a house, they don't own anything. It cannot apply to vanaprasthas because they're in the forest and they just live off the roots and fruits. And it doesn't apply to the sannyasis because they don't have a house. But it applies to the householders because they have the house. They own a house. They have a house, and so therefore they can use that as a shelter for everybody. So this is particularly meant for the householders. Of course, we see that even the sages in the forest would welcome people also. That's not a problem, but that is particularly for the householder. Because the mentality of the householder is to be very possessive. So by welcoming guests, he gives up that type of mentality. So this is an example of one of those rules which is there for encouraging the householder to be generous. And of course, it has other functions as well, because in this way, those who are they don't have any shelter, but they deserve shelter, get some shelter. So there's protective, and health protects the people in society when, due to certain circumstances, they don't have any shelter, as them traveling or whatever. So therefore, this takes care of, say, charity or whatever, where people are in need. Then the householders automatically support them. So this, of course, is extended because we will see that the householder has duties to the brahmachari. So the brahmacharis go to the householder and they beg for food. And then the householder has to give. He is obliged to give food to the brahmacharis. And sannyasi comes, of course, he's obliged to give to them. So there are many obligations of the householder to encourage this type of giving. So it is, of course, it is said that the householder is something like the stomach of the Brahma Purusha. And he supplies the nourishment to the other varna, other ashrams. He supports the other ashrams. So the brahmachari and the sannyasi and the vanaprasa are supported by the grihasthas. Because they're the ones that earn the money and store the grains, etc. Whereas the other ones don't store anything. And so they're at the mercy of the householders. So the varna ashram system actually depends upon the properly trained grihasthas. They have to support the other ashramas. And so this extends all the way through the different varnas, from the sudra, the vaishya, the kshatriya, and the brahmin. They all have, all the grihasthas have to follow this principle of welcoming the guest. So in this way, the ashramas are taken, other ashramas are taken care of. So this is a common principle to inculcate a sense of non-possessiveness. So non-possessiveness, of course, is a good quality in as far as it leads us away from sense gratification and materialism. One becomes more detached. So in this way, one is progressively elevated through the gunas of the sattva. Of course, simply giving charity will not liberate you. It will keep you in sattva-gun, so you can go to brahma-loka or something. Sarva-loka or brahma-loka by that. So if by chance you happen to give your charities and it happens to be a Vaishnava, then very good. Then you get spiritual benefit. Even if you don't know about it, this is the Gyatra Sukriti. And then you can advance from that. So the regular charity is only a means of advance upwards through the gunas. But one may, in the process, also serve the Vaishnava. And in that way, one gets a gap of sukriti by which one can begin, eventually begin the process of bhakti. So the two things, that is being a Vaishnava and being part of the varnashram system, are not completely dependent, because bhakti can exist even without varnashram. If it weren't, then we could not have any varnashram in Kali Yuga, or any bhakti in Kali Yuga, because varnashram is not really intact. I'm going to speak of Western countries or whatever where there's no varnashram, but nevertheless we have bhakti there. So bhakti is not dependent upon varnashram. But certain elements to be favorable. So some of the rules can be used very nicely within bhakti. Rules of cleanliness, and rules of social interaction, etc. can be used. There's no problem with that. Varnashram does not cause bhakti as such. It is not the cause. Bhakti is the cause of bhakti. Therefore, you see in the Bhagavatam statements, for instance, that when you begin bhakti, then you reject all your dharma. Like that. So this is meant to express the idea that bhakti is not dependent on these things, nor is it caused by karma, or anashram, or whatever. At the same time, one can practice what is favorable for bhakti, so many of the rules are favorable, so they can be used. At a certain point, they may become unnecessary, and therefore they can also be given up. So therefore we'll see the case of the bhavaks and brahmakas. They may not even follow any rules, and we will criticize them. They're not following the rules. But they are not bound by those rules at all. So in this way, the rules of Varnashram may be used to some degree as favorable for devotional service. But they're never a cause, and bhakti is not dependent on them.
What is
the
devotional service? And we do not go to the Varnashram. And the devotees are doing devotional service.
Yeah.
We do not go to the Varnashram.
Yeah, well, technically they're beyond. That's why when we take diksha, then we get a Brahman thread. They were superior to the Brahmins already. So what would happen to the Varnas? They all disappeared.
Is it correct Varnashram system to follow? It is dependent on bhakti.
Yeah, it is dependent on bhakti also. And to get the results, ultimately you also have to worship the Lord. It's not called bhakti directly because bhakti is a minor part. It's not the major element there. But they also have to worship the Lord in that sense. Vishnu along with David does, in that sense, there's some bhakti there. How should an ISKCON full-time householder who is dependent on the temple receive an honor of guests? Well, to a degree he can. This is like he says here, at least you offer words. If you can offer more than that, fine. Whatever one is capable of.
Then we can say Kaluga, there is no Varnashram system because there is no
monarchy. What's that?
There is no Varnashram systems in Kaluga because there is no devotional service.
Well, there is some devotional service, but I mean, the Varnashram system really cannot operate without the proper kings. And those kings were established by Manu. But when Kali Yuga started, the whole line disappeared. There was no more kings. After Parikshit, everything, all the kings became very corrupt, and they weren't proper lines anymore. So those dynasties disappeared. So it does require a proper king to institute the rules. Otherwise, how are people going to follow the rules? And who's going to enforce the rules? It becomes a voluntary process. To that degree, fine, we can follow voluntary rules, but not everybody else is going to follow those rules. We can't enforce it on others. Because the rules of society and government are different. So we cannot follow those things. You know, we cannot enforce every kind of things on other people unless you create a different country or whatever like that. But then you do have to have a proper leader to do that, otherwise it'll fail again. So in that system there must be bhakti also. But as in Kali Yuga, it is very difficult to implement that system because we'll see as Kali Yuga goes, everything disintegrates and there are no kings. So what does Varnashram mean in Kali Yuga? It's very difficult to figure out how it is to be implemented when it's actually getting destroyed more and more every year. So, even if it doesn't exist, bhakti can exist. Bhakti exists independently of everything else. You don't need a king for bhakti, you don't need varnas for bhakti or anything. You can just do bhakti. So that's why it's recommended in Kali Yuga, because everybody is born less than sudras anyway, so that means no varnashram system is there. Therefore, we can't even start. If it's dependent on, if bhakti is dependent on varnashram, then we can't even start bhakti. But obviously, that's not so. Of course, it's better since you preach the holy name everywhere, and then bhakti starts that way. No matter whether there's varnashram or non-varnashram.
Bhakti is beyond the
varnashram,
you don't.
Yeah.
You don't have to depend on the varnashram.
No.
Vaidhi Bhakti. So, the rules are given up automatically because they are no longer required to.
Yeah. He's no longer attached to the material world and he spontaneously have love for Krishna, so the rules don't apply. the rule that you have to have 16 rounds doesn't apply because he's chanting all day anyway. Mm-hmm. So, that's the problem. That can be his sadhana bhakti, his sadhana bhakti.
But Vaidhi Bhakti is not only one of the
rules. Has rules, but the rules are based upon a spontaneous service to Krishna, following after the inhabitants of Raja. So the regard for rules is not, the same emphasis is not there as in Vaidhi Bhakti. The motive from Vaidhi Bhakti is we follow because the rule is there. So we follow the rules. And in Raghunuga Bhakti, we follow because we do like the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not because of the rule.
Is there any time limit that a devotee has to be a certain number of years in Sadhana Bhakti and Bhagavad Gita? Is this change different in religions?
It depends simply on taste.
Sometimes a devotee might have no way in another life. He can't himself judge the time in that.
Well, obviously it depends on the proper association.
Nandra Srisimad Bhagavati, this moment is one, Bhagavarati, well, you may say this is a possible part of the
Distributed.